You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Delta Quadrant Podcast, part of the Trekmate Family.
You're listening to the Delta Quadrant, a Star Trek Voyager podcast. This is a podcast where we review episodes of Star Trek Voyager in the order in which they were broadcast. Tonight's episode is The Omega Directive. This is Matt from Arizona.
This is Ben in Arizona.
And this is Gino in Oklahoma.
And Gino, we seem to be missing a crew member. Any idea where they are?
Missing? I don't know about missing. After a lively debate on how awesome or not awesome Chakotay appeared to be, our fourth crewmate Melissa is now in the brig. We have taken away the chalk and any learning materials, so she'll be there for the remainder of this trip.
What about the bucket, Gina?
Well, the bucket's a given. It's kind of bolted to the floor after, let's just call it the incident.
Wait a second, it's bolted to the floor so you can't pick it up? How does it get emptied?
Transporter.
Sure, transporter. It's never emptied when I'm in there.
Well, yeah, that's to teach you a lesson. Yeah, but hopefully
what kind of lesson are you trying to teach me?
Quick hold the brake, man.
But hopefully we can finally break Melissa's spirit from Chakotay once and for all again. But until that time, we're here to review the Omega Directive. It's an all-boy podcast tonight. So without further ado... You sound so enthused, Ben.
Also delayed by about 2 seconds, so let's see how this goes.
No, I don't think you're delayed. I think you're okay for now, I hope. But
I hope so, too.
We'll see.
All right. Well, this is the Delta Quadrant, and reviewing the episode, The Omega Directive, on Sunday, September 22nd, 2013. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we begin in the cargo bay with 7 of 9.
Before we begin about anything, don't you want to know anything about the episode first?
If we must.
The short synopsis of the Omega Directive is Captain Janeway must carry out a top-secret Starfleet directive regarding the most powerful substance known to exist. This is the 21st episode of Season 4 of Star Trek Voyager, first aired April 15th, 1998. Teleplay by Lisa Klink, story by Jimmy Diggs and Steve J.K., and directed by Victor Lobel.
Jimmy Diggs, writing stories. Let's talk about the Omega Directive.
That's very good, Gino. As you can tell, Gino has already been imbibing alcohol at this point. Our guest stars this week include... Our guest stars this week include Jeff Austin as Alos, co-starring Kevin McCorkle as the alien captain, and of course, Majel Barrett as the computer voice.
Majel Barrett.
Ben is so eager because he has the notes this week, so Ben, now you may take us into the Omega Directive.
All right, finally. So, it's Stardate 15781.2, and 709 is going to be working with Harry Kim today, and she even scheduled time for his usual conversational digressions. It is going to be a busy day for her, so she heads over to the mess hall to get Kim, who's been engrossed in a game of Kowtow with Tuvok. Seven takes the game piece right out of Kim's hand and completes the game. Elementary dear Watson, I mean Kim. So, yeah, more Kowtow and Kim and Tuvok.
I just love the idea that Seven has scheduled in extra time for Kim to be a dork.
Yeah, they weren't even trying to give him a chance. This whole episode, Kim is just fodder.
As he should be, because I don't care about him at this point anymore.
It's also funny that 7 of 9 is so good at elementary spatial harmonics.
I love the fact that she even gets to upstage him like that. That's so good. Loved it.
I want to know what Tuvok thinks about that. I mean, this is an extremely difficult game, even for Vulcans.
Well, at least it's difficult for Vulcans. I mean, Harry Kim's picking it up kind of quick, so it can't be that hard.
There you go. Broke the mold, Kim.
Yeah, I would like to see a... what was that game in TNG that Riker played against the weird dudes?
Stratagemon.
I want to see how 7-9 is a Stratagemon.
Versus Data.
Data's only good for a tie, though. So, he's a cheater. Because only cheaters tie.
Sounds like the words of a bitter loser, Ben.
Yeah, a bitter loser. Or a tire. No, actually, I used to, my boss used to tell me all the time, he says, it's really funny, Ben, how those hourly guys over there always seem to finish their job right at 8 hours. Funny how that works. So, yeah, I guess if you're trying to cut corners, you always can. I will. One thing, though, about the Calto, that Matt, when it was like, it was well over a season ago last time we saw it. I'm pretty sure, right?
It was that terrible alter ego episode.
Wasn't it? I thought it was, because that was the whole thing with the weird fake chick in Tuvok, that she could do Calto. So what do you think, though? I mean, maybe Tuvok likes Seven now because she's good at Calto, right?
I always liked Tuvok and Seven's relationship. I mean, we talked about it in Year of Hell when it didn't really happen, but we talked about it in The Raven. I kind of like their little dynamic here. And he's impressed. He even says impressive.
He does look impressed.
For Vulcan.
For a Vulcan. While on the bridge, the engines slow as the Vez Voyager drops out of warp. Paris receives a signal that he's not quite familiar with.
What was that?
We just dropped out of a warp. What's the problem? We were hit by some kind of shockwave. Source? Checking. Hold on. I just lost all my sensor readings. The computer is bringing up some kind of message, but I can't access it. You better take a look at this.
I can see it.
What is it?
I have no idea. My command codes aren't working. The computer says I have insufficient clearance to access the message. We can't function like this. I'm gonna get Harry up here to trace the source.
Don't do anything. I'll take care of this.
Send all sensor data about the particle wave to my ready room.
Tom, disengage engines and hold position here.
Captain, what's going on?
I can't explain right now. Don't discuss any of this with the rest of the crew. I'll have further instructions for you soon.
Be more cryptic, Janeway.
See, but this is... I've always complained usually about how sometimes these teasers aren't as suspenseful as they like to be. Here, we've already got suspense, we've got some mystery going on. I'm really digging this opening.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying this episode's not paced well. We haven't really gotten into the meat of the episode yet, so this probably doesn't hold much water. But you're dealing with pretty much a divided crew if you're still going with the fact that the Maquis still think they're Maquis, even though all the Maquis are dead. And Janeway's being super secretive, and nobody on the ship at all can know about it. That's the perfect opportunity to enact Plan Alpha, wouldn't you say, Chakotay? Maquis, get her!
Does Janeway, I mean, can she hear when she's in the turbo lift there? Because, you know, she's like, she heard Chakotay say, get Harry Kim up here, and then the turbo lift door is open, and then she's like, don't do anything.
I played that back over a couple times. I think it was less of a response to Chakotay and more of a just, nobody touch anything, don't worry about it, I got this. But well, I can see how it'd come off as, I'm responding, don't get Kim up here.
That's what I was saying. I mean, yeah. Does she know that Harry Kim sucks?
No, I took it
as a Janeway insight into her own crew there.
I took it as when the shockwave hits, every monitor goes blank and brings up the Omega symbol, which this episode actually taught me what Omega looks like. But every monitor brings up Omega symbol, so I took it as she was on another deck, the wave hit, the monitors went blank, and the Omega symbol came up, and she's like, oh crap, I gotta get to the bridge.
What would happen if this Omega directive went off in the middle of combat? Like, it's the Dominion War, right? You know, the Breen, or maybe that's what happened when the Breen invaded Earth. They got an Omega particle signal, and all the ships went kapooey, and the Breen just wrecked shop, maybe?
Yeah, that's totally what happened. But anyway, that's how I interpreted that scene, is that she saw the symbol somewhere and rushed up to the bridge. Because as we find out, like right now, I mean, she goes into her ready room, is not fooling around. She, like, cancels all calls, she locks the doors.
Yes, she does. And she wants to access the file Omega 1. And it's access code Janeway 1153 red, clearance level 10. And so she's able to unlock the computer. So in engineering, Chakotay brings up the people to speed, sort of. He hands out some strange orders, and everybody is curious about them. Small ships don't carry secrets so well.
Well, here's the thing about this scene, if you pause real quick. I like some of the dialogue that goes on in this scene and some of the choices that were made, especially when B'Elanna's questioning what the hell's going on. I noticed, you know, B'Elanna usually refers to Janeway as the captain. You know, the captain says this, the captain says that. And when she's talking about what Janeway's been doing, you know, over the past couple of hours or however long this has been, she specifically refers to the captain as Janeway has done such and such. But, you know, she calls her Janeway. And it kind of reminded me of how she was suspicious at first of Janeway at first when she was more Maquis-like in season one. So I thought that was some interesting dialogue choices there. I know it's not anything big.
I wonder if it was, though. I think it's easy to lose respect for a superior when they're being incredibly secretive. If they're not going to clue you in and treat you like part of the team, then why stick around?
I mean, I guess it shows the difference between this ship and the Enterprise-D, because that would never happen on the D. I mean, they let Picard get away with murder half the
time.
Well,
yeah, but you know, what I'm saying is,
realize he was an imposter.
I like letting a little bit of what I take to be the Maquis B'Elanna sneak back into her momentarily when she's talking about Janeway in this scene.
Janeway meets with Seven of Nine. Seven is aware of the Omega Directive, of course, because, you know, she has Borg knowledge. And that's what they have found, an Omega particle. Janeway wants Seven's help to destroy it.
But if someone out there is experimenting with Omega, I'm under orders to stop them. Otherwise, this entire quadrant would be at risk.
Those orders are the result of Starfleet's ignorance and fear. I can alleviate your ignorance. As for your fear...
Sometimes fear should be respected, Seven. Tell me. How many Borg were sacrificed during this experiment?
29 vessels, 600,000 drones, but that is irrelevant.
Not to me. Not to my crew. And not to the people who live in this quadrant. I'm going to neutralize this threat, Seven, with or without your help.
I will assist you.
You will.
I have waited many years to observe this molecule firsthand. I will not deny myself that experience.
Okay, so to this point, I've been pretty supportive of the Borg agenda. Then she says... 600,000 drones, but that's irrelevant.
Yeah, to the Borg it would be, because the Borg is made up of, you know, millions upon millions, I'd even say billions of drones. And if they see this particle, or whatever it is, as the ultimate perfection, then I would think to their hive mind and how they are so callous about life anyway, that, yeah, 600,000 would be irrelevant to them.
I would imagine the ship loss of ship resources would be more painful.
Well, what do you do when you find this particle as the Borg?
It's kind of nebulous as to what the Omega particle is, and we'll get more backstory when we get to the briefing. But it's supposedly this ultimate source of energy, and it's seemingly endless too.
We've seen a lot of Seven and Janeway confrontations this season. I think we've agreed the last two or three, including this one, have been pretty much the same. You know, bucking authority and whatnot, wherever they come to an impasse and unable to reason with each other. I'm okay with the dynamics going on because they're both good actors. But, you know, I'm really hoping at this point that we're going to get something different than Janeway says no, Seven says yes, and then Seven ends up in the cargo bay for two more months.
And I think we'd get that, Ben, not to spoil down the line, but I really do think that... Yeah, they start us off thinking it's the same, but I honestly think that this is one of the best this season so far of Janeway and Seven's confrontations, because what we're going to find out is that Seven's passion for this discovery of this particle is very personal to her, and we haven't really seen anything personal, I would say, since, you know, the Raven. So it is offering up something that we haven't seen in quite a bit of episodes.
Well, I think what it's mostly offering is a religious, you know, yes, institution to the Borg. I think that's the main thing this is. I mean, Seven says that she has to experience this for herself. I mean, generally when you talk about experiences, with high priority, you usually talk about, like, religious experiences of some shape or form. So, I mean, that's basically what they're doing with the Borg here. I mean...
Kind of. I mean, that's the thing they can relate it to, but it's a theoretical perfection.
Well, that's... But that's very much what most religion strives for, is...
Right.
The solution towards imperfection.
And we can still put it in scientific terms like that, Gino. I mean, yes, the Omega particle is theoretical perfection, but for the Borg, even though they're not seen as religious, that would sort of be their holy grail, is because they're in a constant search for perfection.
The idea of the holy grail, the metaphor behind it being something that is unattainable. You know, this is perfection.
By the way, before we move on, I just think I thought it was a clever bit of writing of how they bring Seven into the story, only because, you know, we'll find out too that this Omega Directive is only known by Starfleet captains and flag officers. And, of course, Seven and the Borg would have assimilated
Starfleet. That's actually a great premise that they built in there. It makes a lot of sense. So I like the premise. It's good.
Yeah, but they're coming at it from different angles. I like that.
Yeah, so Janeway, you know, she's got to get ready to do her deal. So she goes to visit the doctor. She's requesting a special medication she will need for this mission. The doctor objects, but reluctantly agrees due to the now infamous Omega Directive. When does Janeway not get her way? Again, I mean, Picard, I mean, how many times does Beverly threaten and then, like, enforce her medical?
Picard down.
Yeah, I mean, plenty of times she's told Picard no based on I'm the doctor. Janeway doesn't give a rat's butt about the EMH, his orders. I mean, that just goes to show you that they don't respect him at all in any way, shape, or form when it comes to being a person with any sort of say.
You're absolutely right there. Yeah. He's not a person.
No, not at all.
Well, they do the same kind of thing. I would just note in the pale moonlight when Sisko demands that Bashir supply him with all that bomb.
Yeah, but that had orders from Starfleet, and that's what gave Sisko the authority. Sisko got authority from Starfleet orders, and Bashir said he'll need those orders in writing, and Sisko says yes. But Janeway has no written authorization here. It's just everybody knows it's just Janeway doing what Janeway wants to do.
Well, no, this is a written, we'll find out, like I said, this is written authorization from Starfleet. They have the directive.
Fair enough, but in the crew's eyes, you know, that holds no weight, really. I mean, we pretty much decided that Starfleet is in the Alpha Quadrant and Voyager's in the Delta Quadrant.
But see, this is, again, with what we talked about earlier with Message in a Bottle, I like that we're seeing some vestiges of Starfleet Command brought into Voyager, which is something that we don't see that often.
Maybe. I don't know, it feels a little hollow.
She gets free reign to break the Prime Directive. I think Janeway's eating this up.
Sure she is, but
yeah, of course she's
eating it up. What I like about that is, at least in this episode, I appreciate that the writer said, this directive says for the duration of this mission, the Prime Directive is rescinded. I'm glad at least they talked about it.
Sure, right. they gave their excuse.
Yes.
Yeah, they built that as part of it. Yeah, I mean, it's constructed well. I mean, like I said, the premise is definitely solid.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's got a solid foundation.
Absolutely. I think it's better than, you know, the usual Prime Directive. What Prime Directive? Like, they actually talked about it.
We're way out here.
Yeah.
Come and get us, Starfleet.
Oh, yeah, right, exactly. Send us a message. Well, in the cargo bay, Seven has discovered an incredible amount of these Omega particles. It looks like they're going to have to involve the rest of the ship. They need the resources. Elsewhere, Harry and Tuvok are working on something special, a very powerful explosive device. Good. Harry, the resident conspiracy theorist, shares his speculations with Tuvok, who is not playing today. Sorry, Harry.
Just again and again, Harry Kim is getting slapped in the face the whole episode.
So I have a question, though. If he's a conspiracy theorist, does that mean you and he would be friends, Gino?
Probably.
They're rivals.
Or would you pretend to be his friend and then, like, beat him up for his lunch money later?
No. See, in theory, we both have plans to kill each other and just don't let the other know about it.
Well, so then this is a Garrick versus O'Brien matchup here, huh?
Pretty much, yeah.
Who's in whose shoes?
You guys are going to be so upset when I get Garrett Wong over here to get on this podcast and slap you all down with his logic.
Right.
I just want to see, you know, we'll cut this out of the episode. I just want to see Ben tell him what a crap actor he is to his face.
Well, it's not getting cut, and I would love to.
I could probably have him in this room.
With me! In my lap.
At the moment. Vagina!
That's all staying in. So, Chakotay and Janeway have a chat. She shares her plan to sacrifice herself to protect her crew. And he's unwilling to let her go off on her own. Oh, that's so sweet. Chakotay reminds Janeway that she is not alone, and she has a better chance of succeeding if they all work together. So Janeway relents and calls a staff meeting. Yeah. But we do get our exposition.
This is not a bad staff meeting, though.
No, it's not. right before we get to that staff meeting, specifically on Chakotay and Janeway. Has anybody noticed that Chakotay Janeway kind of rhymes? Anyway, they...
you go on, Chakotay Janeway kind of rhymes. Let's move on.
That's not even a slant rhyme.
I'm just saying, in my mind. As an
You're messing
listeners.
Stuff up like Alanis Morissette's ironic.
I rhyme like Eminem. Chakotay and Janeway. Let's see if it works. Anyway, about Chakotay and Janeway. These two here, I don't know. I don't like this. Oh, you're not alone, sweetheart. I mean, are they trying to play with us here? Are they trying to tell us that it's, I mean, are they dangling a carrot in front of our face here about these two games together? Is that what they're doing?
I don't know. I would undoubtedly think that if Melissa were here right now, she'd be defending this as Chakotay being a good first officer.
No,
blah,
I'm
blah,
trying
blah.
To get in her pants. I'm sorry.
But you could see that the concern goes a little bit beyond just the professional, I would think. I
He's
do like
it. Creepy, creepy smile, dude, when he talks to her. Don't
see,
like
but
it.
The thing that I do like in this scene, and it has nothing to do with Robert Beltran, it has to do with Kate Mulgrew's line in this scene. I like how she, and we'll get to this when we get to the staff meeting, but she's very, very good at laying out the stakes in this episode. And I like her little speech about, I can tell you this, one or two things is going to happen. Either Seven and I will come back from our mission or succeed, or Voyager's long-range searchers are going to detect an explosion. And if that happens, you have 10 seconds to get the hell out of here. So... that brought some tension for me into the scene, and I ended up liking that scene for that line. I'll just say that much. She does a good job of building up suspense.
Well, it's a top secret staff meeting, and Janeway explains the Omega Directive. It's a threat to the entire galaxy! Read with dramatic intent. The Omega molecule is the most powerful substance known to exist, and it may be tiny, but it packs a punch.
Omega destroys subspace. A chain reaction involving a handful of molecules could devastate subspace throughout an entire quadrant. If that were to happen, warp travel would become impossible. Spacefaring civilization as we know it would cease to exist. When Starfleet realized Omega's power, they suppressed all knowledge of it.
Have you detected Omega here, in the Delta Quadrant?
I'm afraid so. I've been authorized to use whatever means necessary to destroy it. Tom, I've calculated the location of the molecules. I'll transfer the coordinates to the helm. Take us there at full impulse.
Aye, Captain.
I don't have to tell you what's at stake. If a large-scale Omega explosion occurs, we will lose the ability to go to warp forever. We've got our work cut out for us.
So we're pretty much screwed.
Freaking love this. I just gotta say, I mean, I realize that not every episode has to pack this much tension and suspense into it, and I can appreciate a good episodic episode now and then. That being said, I mean, some of the stakes that you guys say that you were invested in last week with Vis-a-Vis that I just wasn't feeling, here I get full on, like, I know what the stakes are. And for Voyage, I mean, for Star Trek Land, it'd be devastating to have a system without warp anyway, but for Voyager specifically, it's that much higher because warp is the only thing that can keep them, you know, to get home possibly within their lifetimes. I mean...
Yeah, but Matt, hold on. In the last episode, you know, there are stakes that are there. I mean, they're real mistakes. They're real stakes that Voyager could suffer. Here, the stakes are, oh my gosh, the worst of the worst of the worst of the worst, possibly the worst thing could ever happen if we don't come through. I mean, it's a little superhero-y.
It might be a little superhero-y, but those stakes work better for me. They're just like sometimes the stakes in a James Bond film. I mean, that kind of stuff works for me. Last week, I knew Tom was going to, you know, be fine.
Yeah, but we all know that Voyager's going to be.
Yes, I know, but I cared about the consequences.
Same result.
I'll say this much. I like the character of Tom Paris, but I cared more about the consequences that would have resulted had this not worked than the consequences that would have resulted had they not gotten Tom back. To me, they're just more groundbreaking. So the what would have come from failure in this episode had me at greater tension and greater suspense than what would have come from failure in the last one.
Yeah, but that just seems very anomaly of the weakish. That's all. That doesn't make it bad. It just doesn't make it unique in any way, shape, or form.
Certainly not unique, but it does drive the stakes up, and I like high stakes. I just do. That's what draws me to this episode. And Anomaly of the Week, I seem to recall that you were so jazzed about some stupid Astral Eddie last season. So this
Astral Eddies, right, Gino?
When you got Astral Eddies versus the Doctor's Imaginary Family, give me Astral Eddies any day of the week, just because the stakes there. But still,
but you guys get off on anomalies, so this should be just right up your alley.
Here's the funny thing about this being an anomaly, though. We're in the Delta Quadrant. Pretty much this is all Borg territory. The Borg have made it to the Alpha Quadrant. If there are millions upon millions of drones and ships and all sorts of stuff, and they know about this Omega particle, and they know it's their end-all be-all of perfection, Starfleet knows about it too, and are probably actively looking for it. And we just come across it on some species that we've never heard of, and all we know of their technology is they have a bunker somewhere. We don't know how they know how to make
it. Definitely no warp drive. There's no warp drive.
Yeah, that is a failing of the episode, but, you know, if you want those kind of stakes, Gino, I suggest you play the Star Trek Armada game, because that I played that way back when in the 2000s, and that game was all about the Omega particle and what would happen if the Federation and all the major Alpha Quadrant powers had to vie against it when the Borg invade. So,
okay, let's do a little timeline work here. When did Galaxy Quest come out?
1999, so a year after this episode.
A year after this episode. 1 year. That's about how long it takes to make an okay feature movie. And their big thing in the movie was the Omega 13 device, which was this incredibly powerful device that nobody knew what exactly it did. Mm-hmm. I wonder if somebody watched this episode and went,
I don't know if it's necessarily it could be very well be, Gino. I just think that having read, you know, literature and even like some religious texts, obviously like the Bible, Omega is a letter, a Greek symbol. It has a certain sense of foreboding to it. It's the last letter of the Greek alphabet about it. It's the end. Yeah. And 13's an unlucky number anyway. So you put those two, you know, bad things together or mysterious things together, and you got yourself an unknown device. But I think Omega's always brought that connotation with it, just the letter.
Sure, but I'm sure you can also agree that sometimes Voyager tends to parody Star Trek a little.
Sure, it does. Sure, it does. I'm just saying that, you know, who knows if it came from this episode or not. I just think that, you know, like I said, Omega, that the letter Omega has a certain connotation to it. It's like the finality. I mean, that's what you would name a doomsday project, you know, Project Omega or whatever. So, you know, whatever.
Oh, no way. I name it Project Doomsday. Project Blow Up All the Things.
You get my point.
Project Avril Lavigne.
Well, she is Doomsday, but anyway.
Back in the cargo bay, Seven is designing a harmonic chamber which could safely contain the Omega molecules. The Borg discovered the Omega particle over 200 years prior. Starfleet scientists hypothesized that Omega existed at the moment of the Big Bang and is the source of all the energy in the universe.
So they're looking for the Higgs boson.
Okay, yeah, I guess. Sure. Yeah, they're looking for God past the energy barrier.
Right. Well, you just pop out of the galaxy, go on out there.
Well, all the stuff.
The happy Vulcan.
Yeah, well, and then Duloc can become Gary Mitchell, and then can meld with and feel the pain of God.
Gary Mitchell, I thought that was Cybok.
They both went through energy barriers. Okay, come on.
But
I'm just saying, if we all just climbed a mountain and then sang a song around a campfire, this episode wouldn't have needed to happen.
True, and you know what? I'm curious then, Gino. Who's going to be rocking the rocket boots? Is that going to be? I'm going to say that the rocket boots either are on Melissa or me.
Okay, Tom Paris has the rocket boots because he's the thrill seeker, but I could see them also putting the rocket boots on Harry Kim and something going terribly wrong and people having to save it.
Harry Kim wouldn't know how to operate them and he'd probably die.
Exactly. True, well, he'd break his leg on a rock and they have to reverse Travis Mayweather him.
Yeah, but if these are the, you know, future documentaries, that makes total sense why the decks, you know, as you're going up, the numbers go down. when you use the rocket boots, because that just means that Harry Kim's memory sucks and he can't remember what he's doing ever. Gino, I
but
like
if,
it.
If Neelix was in charge, all you would have to do is build a space elevator, but claim to know everything about it.
Wow. Yeah, monocles, one of this scale monocles, models.
I'm shocked we managed to spring up the space elevator episode, which is something I had forgotten about.
Yeah, and you know what? Star Trek needs more monocles. We need more monocles in Trek. If we had more monocles, you know what? If you put a monocle on Chakotay, that would instantly make him a better character.
Okay, which side? The tattoo side or the non-tattoo?
Oh, it has to be on the tattoo side.
Needs a monocle. If anybody
the doctor needs a monocle, yes. I agree.
That no, or some like, really thin glasses.
Every time Chakotay gets serious with Janeway, he just takes the monocle out. It's like,
he puts it on.
You're not alone Janeway. Here, buddy.
This is God, serious hey, business.
You know what? This
These
is
are
what
still sheets. Come on, baby.
This is what happens when you leave the Delta Quadrant boys alone.
My depth perception sucks.
Yeah.
But bringing it back to what we were talking about for a second, if I may... what I do like about the scene that you're talking about in the cargo bay with Seven recounting the history of Omega and the Borg, I do like how they're using that to bring in more of the religious aspects, because don't they talk about some... They got it from some culture who said that this particle burned the sky for them or something like that.
Right. Yeah,
I forget what number of species it was, but there was one species who said it burned the sky, and then the next species had a little more information, and on until they got to somebody who actually had technology.
Yeah, I feel it's a triple-digit species, so maybe it's an early one.
Like 276, something like that.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, but you're right, Matt. It's more of the religious implications, of course.
So. Which is a theme that I actually like in this episode. Usually, you know, when we talk about religion in Star Trek Voyager, it's usually connected to Chakotay. I like the fact that this will, you know, center around what really is going to be Seven's first spiritual experience. It's something that works for me. I'll say that much.
Okay. Well, on the bridge, the Voyager has entered a planetary system, the source of the Omega particle. Well, subspace in the area has been destroyed, so warp speed is not possible. Janeway decides to take an away team to the surface to get rid of the particles. And on the planet, it's a disaster area, the site of a large explosion. The scientists who are working with the Omega substance, quote, for the duration of the mission, the prime directive is rescinded. Well, Janeway, that never happens. Yeah, right. Janeway always rescinds the directive.
Well, sure she does, but like I said, I'm glad they give some lip service to it this time and actually said that it's the directive that says that we can't go by the prime directive this time.
So this is the prime directive, then? Shouldn't it be the alpha directive?
No, it's the omega directive. It's the final word.
Oh, it's the final word. But shouldn't, if it comes ahead of the prime directive, shouldn't it be the alpha? The beginning directive?
Well,
like, should they retcon their directives into having this one as
the prime directive? I take it as the prime directive is the alpha omega, and then you have alpha directive, and then you have the omega directive as the final directive. So,
well, that's so clever. Right over my head. I don't. I will say seriously though about the episode, it was kind of weird that they get there and then they didn't anticipate. You know, of course, subspace being destroyed, and they didn't see that coming. That didn't strike true to me. So all this planning that they were doing is, you know, pulling their resources seemed to be kind of for naught. I didn't really like that aspect of it. It bothered me for some reason. And then they get there and then the scientists, you know, are doing their thing. And, you know, it seems like the scientist, you know, the one that they rescued that was still alive, you know, he comes to play a part later. And his original state of being is like a polar opposite to what he, you know, turns out to be. So... I don't know. I didn't really feel that part either.
I took it as when they find the guy down there, he's still... I mean, I don't know what kind of explosion this thing creates, but we get the impression that
it's
a
didn't it just destroy a huge area and a huge explosion? Why is the guy alive? It's awfully convenient.
I don't know, and frankly, I really don't care. What I'm focused on is I think that his characterization when he's there at the beginning is someone who had just survived a very big explosion, and then later, you know, however many hours.
Yeah, but this
later
is like hours there. Later, and then all, and then like it seems like they found him like minutes after the incident. I mean, they find him hours, almost like it seems quite a long time has passed. You know, on the better side of a day has passed.
Right, his hearing would be impaired. This guy would be yelling.
Well, how about him just be dead? Since no emergency responding teams have visited the site, obviously Voyager is a first responder. I mean, that's fine and all, but I mean...
incredibly resilient race. I mean, have there to be the Omega particle.
Guys,
yeah, and then it makes me think all about the containment. Like, shouldn't the containment be leaking now? I mean, they can't control it. How can they contain it? So how is Voyager able to freely access it? I mean, the story's not making any sense.
What is this? First of all, when have you ever been bothered about a story making sense? You fill in plot holes all the time. I'm calling you out on your...
Okay, so fill the plot holes in this story. How do we fill them here? The race is completely inept and incompetent, but the most survivable, resilient species ever?
Or why are we focused on this species so much?
I'm focused on it while I'm watching it. I can't keep my eyes off of what's going on here. Like, there's all this tension, like you say, but it feels so paper thin.
My focus is the number of what species the Borg had found. I still can't find it. So, listeners, you let us know what species it is that the Borg originally encountered, this Omega particle, and you will get exactly zero Quatlus, because that's not something we do.
Well, then, I would say, Ben, just from my perspective, like so many other times in Star Trek, you were watching the wrong thing.
Okay, what was I supposed to be watching? I'm just curious.
The Doctor. You're supposed to be paying attention to the Doctor the whole time. This is actually a Doctor episode.
Where was he? Was he in the background the entire time?
He's just there. Him. If you got to pay attention, he's like peeking in through a window or making out with B'Elanna when nobody's watching or something.
So
like
he's making sure that all this happens as according to plan.
He actually set this all in motion.
Right. Okay. He did this so that Seven could have a growth experience. He knew she was stuck in the Rapids, and she needed to move on, so she needed a crisis situation in order to bring herself to a head and have some real introspective moments.
Let's keep going on so Ben can hate on more of this good episode.
Well, on the ship, Seven is running an extremely efficient crew in her cargo bay. Harry is resenting this union mentality that's going on here. That's actually an interesting comment, a union mentality.
Is yeah, Melissa, what Starfleet is?
No, I think she means that that's what's... I think what's being said there is that Starfleet's kind of a union. I mean, is that the idea here?
I think it's more how Seven's running things down there is
love, the
designations.
I loved how Seven was running things, and of course Kim gets demoted.
Yes, that's excellent.
I love the one guy that came up to her, though. She's like, this is your designation. And no question, she's like, yes, ma'am, and hops too.
Well,
that's
yeah,
the
of course,
Starfleet officer.
That's what you're supposed to do. And instead, Kim's like whiny, like, I don't want to be have a number. I'm a person.
Well, he is a bridge officer.
No matter what she says.
But
I mean,
that doesn't matter. Seven of Nine is just automatically better than him. Therefore, he should shut up and be happy.
Well, I would agree, but I mean, in one aspect, I can understand that I wouldn't be too happy with some bored lady, you know, telling me what to do.
If I feel bad for anybody in this episode, it's Neelix. The only interaction he gets in the entire episode is with Harry Kim. At least Harry Kim had like 40 lines or something ridiculous like that.
That's true. And Neelix was busy getting his whiskers tugged.
That's disgusting.
Well, in sickbay, the Doctor is caring for the survivors of the explosion. Seven wants to interview the survivors. After pre-planning their next session of Miss Manners, the Doctor allows Seven to speak with the patient.
How many of the molecules were you able to synthesize?
200 million? I'm not certain.
What is the isofrequency of your containment field?
1.68 terahertz. We used the molecules on resonance to calculate the field.
That should have been enough to stabilize them.
Obviously it wasn't.
Obviously. But your approach is innovative. Perhaps I can adapt your technique and improve upon it. You will assist me.
Our equipment was destroyed. If you can transfer the molecules to your ship, maybe they can be saved.
I have no intention of saving them.
What?
My orders are to destroy the Omega molecules.
This is my life's work, the salvation of my people.
Will you assist me or not?
Our resources are nearly gone. The future of my people depends on this discovery.
And your answer is no.
Small-minded creatures. You destroy whatever you don't understand. Rescue ships are on the way. They won't let you do it.
Please, try to be calm. Seven, you'll have to leave.
You don't realize what you're doing. You don't know what this is. What this means.
On the contrary, I understand perfectly.
1.68 terahertz!
It's explosive. So, in this here, I see this pretty much as the convincing Seven needs in order to do what she does in the end. At least this gives her some elements of motivation, I guess. Am I wrong about that?
No, I would say that this definitely contributes to what she was already feeling. I would say that it was contributing to what she was already feeling at the time. Because we had known that from the very first Ready Room scene that she didn't want to destroy Omega. She wanted to try to harness it. And I think, again, we don't get a lot of the science behind, you know, why this species and why they were able to do this exactly, but I don't necessarily need a whole ton. They give me exactly what I wanted. I mean, I made the comparison last week to Red Matter, which doesn't in Star Trek 2009, which doesn't have a very much or any scientific explanation. I just know that it's a
magic.
It's a powerful substance that can create a black hole. That's all I need to know about it. And what I need to know about Omega right here in this episode
is magic.
Well, if you want to say it's magic, that's fine. But what I know about it is, it's a very powerful particle. It's an almost unlimited power source. It's inherently unstable, which is why, you know, and we'll find this out later too, when it'll stabilize spontaneously. I mean, we never figure out why it does stabilize. So it's unstable, and if it's destroyed, it can really screw things over. So,
this is the point we get the actual tension in the episode. Aside from the fact that everything's about to blow up because this thing is extremely volatile, this is the point where we get a decision to make. Okay, so this thing can be used for actual good, and it'll save this entire population. So, blowing this thing up, which might kill all of us, is going to save all of us, but not blowing it up is the salvation of this entire civilization, and
potentially Voyager could use it.
Yeah.
Voyager could use an unlimited power source. Why not? So, you know.
It's on shaky ground, yes.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give them the liberty that says it's there for a reason, and we're not going to deal too much with arguing about saving it or not.
And for me, it's on much less shaky ground than last week or some of the other episodes we've done this season.
I just think his argument was a little more convincing than, say, the German soldier in The Killing Game.
Yes.
Oh, much more so.
Guy, turn on all of your people, because I'm a holographic program, so of course I've got flawless logic.
And you should be concerned with German greatness, which is a species that an ethnicity you had never run into before and would have no reason to care about. So,
I mean, fast forward in the history of that regime, I don't think they made it very long.
You're right, this is much better than The Killing Game.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good lord. I don't know. I think I'd weigh them equally. But on the planet, they continue to break through the door to get to the particles. Janeway is showing remarkable physical strength. Yes, yes, she is. And she manages to help pry open a duritanium door on which phasers have been ineffective. They plan to transport the particles to the harmonic chamber and then destroy them. Janeway apparently does know when to quit. There are some boundaries you do not cross, and Omega's threatening power is one of them.
That's one of my favorite lines from this episode. It was in the trailer for it. I remember it very clearly. It's the final frontier has some boundaries that should never be crossed, and we're looking at one of them. Love it.
And that's pretty poignant when it comes to the fact that every TNG episode is Picard explaining the final frontier. It's a big thing that Voyager's kind of kicking back at normal Star Trekkiness.
Okay. Don't understand why they need to open the door to transport the particles.
Dude, she wanted to take a look at it, you know? It's a containment unit.
Ben,
what could be wrong with opening the door?
Ben! Seriously, you've cared about far less things in other worse episodes. Who
those episodes
the hell
think about?
Cares?
Well, those other episodes didn't make me think about these things. And this story is trying to be very interconnected and well-developed, and it's not.
Well,
it's supposed to be highly dramatic, and the drama is false without a good story to back it up.
Well, that's not correct
either. The
reason the
drama is false, I think, would have to do with the pacing of the episode. Everything is so rushed from the get-go. From the second we experience the Omega particle, everything is rushed. We're running out of time from, you know, 10 minutes in. So you have nowhere to go when you're already at 10.
Yeah, so I guess I'm just looking at the video counter and saying, when does 43, 42 happen? Because I know everything's going to be all right, and I just don't buy how, the stakes. I don't care. I mean, I don't care. It's not because the stakes aren't, quote, told behind. I just don't care because I know they don't matter. And it's not an interesting enough story. There's no twists. There's no turns. There's no great things talked about here that's keeping me invested.
Well, fine. Then you should care about that every time we watch a Voyager episode, because we all know by 42, 43 that it's all going to be okay.
Right, but the other episodes have story points that I get really interested in. They have character development that matters to me, not the same thing I've seen, seven times this season.
Well, I
don't care about Seven bucking authority anymore. Well, something different.
Seeing something different is not a genome thief for me.
I just want to say, when you say bucking authority, Ben, it kind of sounds like you're saying something else.
Okay. I'll leave that alone. So, Chakotay and Seven have a meeting of the minds. You know, they have a number of moments like this. You'd swear they were going to set the two of them up at some point. Well, nah.
For now, we stick to the plan. Stand by to transport the molecules into this chamber and neutralize them as ordered.
I have been a member of this crew for 9 months. In all of that time, I have never made a personal request. I am making one now. Allow me to proceed. Please.
Why is this so important to you?
Particle 010. The Borg designation for what you call Omega. Every drone is aware of its existence. We were instructed to assimilate it at all costs. It is perfection. The molecules exist in a flawless state. Infinite parts functioning as one.
Like the Borg.
Precisely. I am no longer Borg, but I still need to understand that perfection. Without it, my existence will never be complete. Commander, you are a spiritual man.
That's right.
If you had the chance to see your God, your great spirit, what would you do?
I'd pursue it with all my heart.
Then you understand.
That's right. It's Voyager Season 4, Episode 21, The Omega Directive, or What Does God Need with a Particle?
I don't know exactly if appealing to Chakotay was, a direct attempt to show us that this is a religious experience for Seven, although it certainly feels that way.
Yeah, I think they've used Chakotay as that main thing for a while. So, of course, she would appeal to him. Maybe Neelix, considering his existential crisis had a little while back.
Yeah, mortal coil.
Yeah, I think Chakotay's the one to go to when you're talking religion.
Right, so we've seen this, then we've seen him do this role then. So, I mean, that's where they're going with it. And it's a little odd just pointing out that Omega's particle 001, I mean...
It's 010.
Okay, so this was the 10th particle they found. After
is it 10th or is it the 2nd? It could be binary.
Oh, it could be the binary, maybe. Or the 9th. I don't know. Yeah, but either way, it's certainly not the 432nd one that they met from assimilating 800 and something aliens, It's just a little convenient, once again, that they make this, the ultimate Borg priority. It just seems like such a retcon to go this route.
That has a lot to say about Borg culture, though. I mean, do they hypothesize about this?
That's what article? I mean, though, that... That's why it's a retcon, though, because the Borg are not supposed to be a culture of, people. They're supposed to be a hive mind, essentially one individual.
They experience it when they encounter it. It's not a matter of, we believe this thing exists because we do. That's stretching a lot.
No. But they say that the particle is, their idea represents perfection. I mean, where do they get that? Where do they get that understanding?
Yeah,
I mean, was it something they assimilated in from another culture then?
Perfection that they're working towards. They need to define the problem, right, Ben? But, okay. I don't know if they could say it's a particle that they're looking for. Who knows what it is they're looking for? I don't know.
They're looking for it to fill that hole in their Borg heart, and it's just, this doesn't seem like the greatest way to do it.
No, this is absolutely not a retcon, and I'll tell you why. I go back to a line that was given in Best of Both Worlds 2, when Picard is on the ship in sickbay talking to Worf and Data as Locutus, and he's saying, you know, why do you resist? We only wish to raise quality of life for all species. And I see this, I interpreted this Omega particle as something that they would see as raising the quality of life and perfection for all species, which has always been the Borg's ultimate goal. I also like this scene only specifically because we have been talking about Seven bucking authority and, you know, going against the rules and all that sort of stuff. And I see this as the next progression in her step to becoming a fully fledged member of the crew. Seven of Nine up to this point has been just a doer. And, you know, to hell with the rules, to hell with procedure, I'm just going to do it. Whether that's, you know, trying to contact the Borg in the gift or, you know, beaming Species 8472 out against wishes. Here she's actually trying to go through the hierarchy of the ship for the first time, you know, in this season's run. So I see this as the next step in her evolution.
I see how you can see it that way. I think she's working with Janeway because Janeway's only the only one on the ship that's actually allowed to talk about it. But when she's talking to Chakotay here, I think it's less of a hierarchy type of thing and more of a you relate because you see things this way.
Sure, I saw it on both levels, to be honest with you. But, you know, I was able to see that, you know, she is making some progress before, you know, and she even tells Janeway later, I could have just done this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, she says, you know, I could have just gone around you. That doesn't matter. I'm playing by the rules here. One thing I noticed during the scene between her and Chakotay that threw me off a little bit as I was watching it, the way they shot her, she's turned in a direction to where she's almost speaking along her shoulder line and she's got her head tilted a little bit. So when she's speaking with her strained voice like that, it causes a muscle in the side of her neck to pop out. So she has this weird kind of poppy neck thing going on with a Cardassian effect that really threw me off. That probably was the wrong thing to pay attention to in the scene, but I couldn't look away.
You think that's what the Cardassian net trick is?
That's it. I think that's it. Just making the neck look like the ridges. I don't think there's anything beyond that.
Nope. Well, back on the bridge, it's time for some much-needed tension. They need to beam the particles.
What do you mean, time for some tension? We've been getting it the whole time.
Oh.
Yeah, but it hasn't been working for Benjamin here.
Yeah, no smile with my rolled eyes. So, they need to beam these particles on board, but there are two alien ships on the intercept course. Flying at impulse, we assume, at least, Voyager beams the particles aboard and takes off. Voyager is on the run, but the aliens are hot on their tail. In the cargo bay, Seven is working on stabilizing the molecules, but Janeway is hellbent on destroying them.
Seven, the procedure.
It's working. 11% of the molecules have already been neutralized.
Let's see if we can speed up the process a little.
Did Commander Chakotay tell you about my idea?
Yes.
Then you will allow me to stabilize the remaining molecules.
You know I can't do that.
Your Starfleet directive is no longer relevant. I have found a way to control Omega.
I don't care if you can make it sing and dance. We're getting rid of it.
A foolish decision.
Yes, but it's mine to make. Now step aside.
I could have done this without your permission, but I chose to follow your command structure. I should have made the attempt. I still can.
But you won't. You know I'm not trying to stop you from finding perfection. But I can't risk the safety of this quadrant. Omega must end here. We both know that.
I can't risk the safety of this quadrant.
Cop out.
Not a cop out. We've had this discussion way too many times. Just get over it.
I will at least say that I love Janeway throughout this entire episode.
She I didn't love her hair.
No, you know what? That's true, actually. Gina, her hair was like extra poopy or something.
It just wasn't working for me this week.
Yeah, it looked like a basket or a net, like an insect.
Unfortunately, I do think this kind of hairstyle stays for the rest of the four seasons.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And if I remember correctly, in the first episode when we get to season 5, she'll have the full-on bob that we're all so familiar with for her for the rest of the series.
Yeah. They should back up a few episodes. Something was working right then that just, yeah, I don't know, Gino. It fits so well.
I think the best is in this, the last of the really amazing Janeway you'll see, I think.
Oh, man.
No, because I really like her post season 5 hair. I think that suits her more than what they're doing here with this
one. No, on this episode, I agree, but I think Gino's right about it. There was something for a couple episodes there. However, I still like her performance throughout the entire thing.
Yes.
I think she just delivers end on end.
Hair or not, she's a good actress.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And I also...
I want to see a bald Janeway. Make that happen.
Well, we've already seen a bald woman in Trek. So.
This whole thing of, you know, Seven's like basically pleading here and they're telling her no, it's supposed to make you like feel bad for Seven that she's not getting what she wants. But, I mean, she is... Why would we feel bad in any way, shape, or form? Even though I know that's what they want us to feel, but she wants us to do no different than anything else she's been doing, which is she's trying to sacrifice her own self, or she's trying to make her own selfish needs, you know, and sacrifice the needs of all the others.
I don't see
anything different about her character here.
No,
I see her being her.
No, well, I see her being her, but I see a different kind of disappointment in her. Rather than, you know, what we've seen in the past. What I see the disappointment in here is, like, she's been told this whole season, you got to play by the rules, because if you play by the rules, you're much more likely to get what you want. We can work together. We can work this out. You got to play by the rules. And here she's going to try to play by the rules, and she still comes up disappointed. So that's what I took as her, as why she's acting the way she is. But you're right. I mean, I'll give it that much. It's not, she's still being her, but... She went about what she's been told as the right way to go about things in order to get what you want on this ship, and she's still being denied.
Yeah, so, the point being that when she doesn't get what she wants, she does whatever she wants to do.
But she didn't do that this time.
Well, I mean, we'll get to the end here. So, Janeway and Seven prepare the molecules for decompression. Just as they are about to exit the bay, Seven looks inside and sees a perfect arrangement. A divine face, perhaps. Having destroyed the molecule, Seven stands at the bridge with a look of sadness on her face. She doesn't do what she's told. She goes back for a second look, and for any parent knows this well, you know, sometimes that's not a fight you pick when a kid goes back and looks, but you do note that as one more disobedience that they did that day.
But she didn't, like, she didn't...
She did a harmless, negative thing. She didn't listen to her captain, and, you know, in a time of crisis... What's any different than that in beaming the, you know, Species 8472 out there?
Okay, yes, but I will say that her disobedience has, if you want to call it that, which I don't even like that word using in this term, but whatever.
Well, you do obey orders, so
what, disobey orders. Would you just let me finish, please?
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but she didn't then stay there and attempt to keep trying to stabilize it. She did leave. She hesitated for a second, but she left, which is something that's been...
That's the difference between things we've seen Seven do earlier and things she's doing now. She just went back and looked at it. She didn't shut down blowing out the airlock.
She didn't start putting in Borg... She didn't start putting in Borg codes that Harry Kim couldn't override. And yeah, you know,
she still got what she wanted, though.
She didn't she didn't.
She got a look at it.
Yeah, well, that's all she, you know, in the end needed to see was she needed to experience perfection. So she experienced it, so she got what she wanted.
Well, she got... She might
I think
have
got, we'll hear that in this next clip.
But wait, before
all right,
we
get, let's get there.
But, you know, before we get into the next clip, I will just say she got what she wanted, but I don't think she got it the way she wanted. I'll put it that much.
All right, so...
I wondered who was running my program. Master Da Vinci doesn't like visitors after midnight.
He protested. I deactivated him.
What are you doing here, Seven?
The simulation contains... many religious components. I was studying them to help me understand what I saw in Cargo Bay 2.
The data wasn't clear on why Omega stabilized in the last few seconds. The chances are it was simply a chaotic anomaly. Nothing more.
For 3.2 seconds, I saw perfection. When Omega stabilized, I felt a curious sensation. As I was watching it, it seemed to be watching me.
I wondered who was running my program. Master Da Vinci doesn't like visitors after midnight.
He protested. I deactivated him.
What are you doing here, Seven?
This simulation contains many religious components. I was studying them to help me understand what I saw in Cargo Bay 2.
The data wasn't clear on why Omega stabilized in the last few seconds. The chances are it was simply a chaotic anomaly.
nothing more.
For 3.2 seconds, I saw perfection. When Omega stabilized, I felt a curious sensation. As I was watching it, it seemed to be watching me. The Borg have assimilated many species, with mythologies to explain such moments of clarity. I've always dismissed them as trivial. Perhaps I was wrong.
If I didn't know you better, I'd say you just had your first spiritual experience.
So, standing ovation for Jeri Ryan, but Janeway, you're chalking these Omega particles forming perfectly to a chaotic anomaly? You're leaving this up to the law of infinite probability that says a plane could land in my living room right now to the fact that these things have arranged perfectly? Come on!
Well, that doesn't bother me that much, because like I said, we already know that the molecule is inherently unstable. They don't explain a lot of the science behind it, and I'll give you that much, but from every impression that I've gotten, it sounds like it's very, very hard, and no one has figured out the definitive way to stabilize these things, because everyone either gets blown up or whatever. So, who the hell knows why it stabilized? So I'll tell you why, because
it's the writer's way of showing that all religious experiences are hollow and coincidental, because that's what Janeway basically says, that, oh, it was
that's what Star Trek is.
Yeah, it was a lovely coincidence, and, you know, there you go. We'll call that a spiritual experience. I mean, that just adds the falsest ending upon a falsely executed episode. That just makes me cringe.
I can't roll my eyes enough at you, Ben. You're just so unbelievably wrong about this whole episode. It's
I don't know. I can't roll my eyes enough about that. I mean, you're saying that religion is just where science is too lazy to explain it? I'm with you, Ben.
Thank you.
Pause. You think the whole episode is false because of this ending? Really?
No, but this ending's certainly false. And
yeah,
that's what Gino's
saying. They could have tied it together a little bit better. I mean, Seven just had a almost out-of-body spiritual experience. She saw the perfection that the Borg have been looking for forever, and Janeway's like, well, I'm going to put my explanation on it because I'm the captain.
That's meaningless. You know, that Star Trek religion's meaningless. Regardless of what's, you know, how they try to color it, that's the moral of this story here.
I would think, even as separated as she is from the Borg right now, the earlier Seven of Nine, who tried to contact the Borg on several occasions, upon finding that there's a society that at least there's still a few surviving members of that know how to create this Omega particle, she's going to put a little phone call to the Borg and say, hey guys, guess what I found?
Yeah, some stellar background radiation is going to make its way to the Borg Collective. Assimilate them.
Well, that does it, I think.
Do you think?
I certainly am done talking about this episode. I was ready to have a good experience and everything, and Ben just sucked every bit of joy out of it.
Well, that's what this episode did to me.
Oh, please. Well, you know what? Don't even exaggerate, because you've liked far worse episodes than this. So, you know, on a scale, we'll start with you. On a scale of 0 to 1, what do you give this episode?
Oh, we're going to start with me? I'm going to give it a 0. We're going to start with me. Keep those averages low. No, in reality, I think, you know, guys, when you set the stakes at survive or don't survive at all, then the stakes are false. So I know we're going to survive, therefore there is not an option to not survive. And I can't give this episode better than a 2.
That's unbelievably harsh, and I don't think very accurate at all, but that's your rating. Gino, what about you?
I think the stakes probably weren't that high, in my opinion. I think at worst-case scenario, the thing blows up, we get out of the way just in time for a warp drive to go out. Next week we find somebody who we can buy a functioning warp drive from, because that's what Voyager does. I think it was an enjoyable episode, and I like the species. I would have liked to learn more about these guys. They had some pretty cool makeup, and probably took that guy longer in the makeup chair than it did to shoot his scene, but We had some good Seven moments. We had some good Janeway moments, and Tuvok got in there pretty well. The Harry Kim scenes, they're obviously slapping him around. Still, I'd probably watch this episode again. It's not my favorite episode in the world, but I'm going to go with a 3.75.
I think that's much more accurate. But anyway, like I said, I mean, you guys are entitled to your own opinions, but I don't know. See, every time I bring up this argument...
Wait a second. Don't you want to know what Melissa gave it?
Oh, did she give a rating?
Yeah, she gave a rating.
Oh, please.
I have her new sliding scale here, Matt. she rates this a 4.01. A little harsh, but
harsh for Melissa, wow.
Still quite good.
Right, still good. Still good. You know, she's never going to get anything below a 4. I think we've established that, unless something was really wrong with the episode. But I take it she doesn't put her rationale, she just gives her rating.
Yeah, no rationale today. She said if she ever gets out of the break, she'll let us know.
So okay.
Maybe okay. That'll force us.
Well, here's the thing, guys. I've brought up the fact that stakes aren't high in episodes and we know everything's going to be fine in so many other Star Trek before that what I'm trying to do at this point is remove the meta-knowledge that I have that this show goes on for 3 more years. I think that's what you have to do in any of these Star Trek episodes, and I think that this episode did have everything that I search for in a Star Trek episode. What you guys claimed that you got out of last week that I never got, I got this week. So maybe, you know, within the last couple weeks, we all got appeased. But for me, this was a very Star Trek-y episode with some very good stakes, some stakes that would uniquely hurt Voyager more than any other incarnation of Star Trek, I would think. And some great character development. I mean, aside from Robert Picardo, who I think is a phenomenal actor, this episode utilizes what I consider the two best actors on all of Voyager to be. And it utilizes them in a way that I think is interesting, I think moves both characters forward, particularly Seven of Nine with her first not only religious experience, but also the first time that she's actually trying to come around to be a good crew member and go through the proper channels, and she still gets denied in the end, but I see the progression of her arc forward. So to paraphrase Ben from a couple of episodes ago, so I'm going to hold my hand up. It's got action, story, character development, drama, and stakes. It's a 5 stars, and you can suck my 5 stars, Ben.
Are they ribeye
stars?
Yeah, 5 stars. Are they ribeye steaks, T-bone steaks, New York strip steaks, London broils? I need you to define these steaks.
Okay, you gave it 5 stars, seriously?
Yes. Okay, this is one of my favorite episodes this season.
Incredibly rewatchable, I would say.
Yes.
So I had a hard time finding out what did we learn here? What did Star Trek teach us here?
Well, here's the thing. I'll concede this point that I don't think that this has the necessary sense of morality play that a lot of Star Trek has. I'd like to point out, though, that in my opinion, you know, it doesn't always have to be that way.
Sure.
I think specifically you loved Vis-a-Vis, and yet I don't think that necessarily has a morality lesson either, except for maybe, you know, enjoy what you have. But even that is sort of underplayed compared to the other things going on in the episode. And here, it would be hard to say what the morality lesson is. I don't know if it does have it. But for me, I mean, we even discussed this earlier. We rate episodes on entertainment value. And for me, this had the ingredients of a Star Trek episode that I liked and really enjoyed. I mean, this is one of my favorites from this season. I mean, I think I have one other episode this season that's a 5 for me. But the right elements of character development, action, drama, suspense, all that sort of stuff came together and worked for me in this episode. So I don't feel bad about giving it a 5.
Yeah, and I'm not questioning your rating. I'm surprised. I mean, you don't tend to give episodes 5 stars much. So this is warm reception from the Matt arena.
I give it when I think it deserves it. And for me, this deserved it.
Yeah, well, you're entitled to your opinion. Brandon Braga, however, was ultimately happy with its philosophical clash between Janeway and Seven, and said that he thinks that's what made the show.
Janeway doesn't believe in religion, and Seven does. That's like the same clash almost that we got with Neelix and Laura Coyle.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, but didn't you have the same problem too when we reviewed that episode way back when? I think it was one of your first ones when we reviewed Sacred Ground.
When Janeway goes and saves Kes through getting a religious...
Yes.
Yeah, that was also a hollow experience.
Right. Okay. So you're saying you're experiencing some of the same problems you had with that episode in this one.
No. The other episode had a lot more. They had different issues. This one is mainly to do with that. We've seen this from Seven a lot, and I want to see something different. Just like at the end of the Killing Game, we talked about how we wanted to see a different alien. I want to see a different dilemma here, you know. And so when you make that dilemma happen again, I'm like, okay, well, you know, give you your chance, and then you don't pay it off. Nothing unique happens that I haven't seen already. All of a sudden, I don't care again. You know, when I didn't care about the story in the first place. So that was the real problem. I didn't care about the story the first time around. And then they just doubly don't deliver.
I'd like to point out, just for consistency's sake, that you gave this the same rating that you gave what supposedly is your least favorite Voyager episode, Q in the Gray.
I gave Q in the Gray a 2.5.
Oh, so the episode you hate the most, you rated higher than this one. I think that's interesting.
Yeah, the episode I hate the most, I rated a 2.5.
Yep. So I was about to ask why Roxanne Dawson didn't get a lot of screen time in this episode.
She had to be given birth.
I come upon an article in Memory Alpha that says the reason why Torres is not at the Omega briefing here is due to the fact that the actress Roxanne Dawson went into labor straight after the filming of the only scene in this episode that her character of Torres does feature in. Dawson gave birth on January 16th, 1998.
Yeah, I figured that would be why, because We all know that, because we've seen it before in other Star Trek when actresses have gotten pregnant. They mysteriously aren't there for a couple of episodes.
Right. So, will we see her the next episode or few?
I forget. Oh, well, ironic I should say I forget, because the next episode's Unforgettable. Ha ha ha. But I can't remember if she's in that one. I know she for sure comes back by the time we get to the one after that. And she'll definitely be back for the season. I know for a fact she's in the season 4 finale. Like each character plays a bigger role in that finale. So welcome to the feedback section. This week we're going to be reading some of the comments you guys had on our retrospect review. Ben, we'll start off with you. I believe we got a comment outside of the forum.
Yeah, from a member outside the forum. And you too can leave messages at trekmatefamily.uk.com. I think.
No, anyway. Let's actually get the right. It's trekmate.org.uk.
But
if you go to trekmatefamily.com, it will auto-direct there.
Oh, really?
Okay. That's better.
That's actually really helpful. That's a good idea that they did that.
So, all right, so I'll start over then. Yeah, so you loose listeners...
You're calling our listeners loose?
And you too, listeners, can go to www.checkmatefamily.com to leave comments on our website, which Anya did, and she said, I love following along with you guys. I'm a few episodes into season 5 as a first-time watcher and 26 years old, and I found you guys a few weeks ago. This is just the discussion I've been craving. Well, you're welcome.
That sounds so self-gratifying, Ben, but we do appreciate the comment, and we hope we continue to bring you the discussion that you've been wanting for a long time. So we're gonna move quickly on to the forum comments. We'll start off here from our loyal listener Takaran Golem, or Takarangolem, as we like to call him, who says, "I just wanted to say thanks again for having me on the podcast. It's always a blast talking with you guys." Well, we love talking with you too, Tak. The only thing I could think of that I didn't mention while on the show was that nagging feeling that some people will misconstrue the message of the episode. To be clear, I'm not referring to anyone on the podcast or the forums, but there is a natural tendency among some males to overly fear the prosecuting alleged violators. Some go so far as to suggest that anything other than a traditional violation shouldn't even be considered a crime. Isn't that a scary statement? And yes, I agree. It is. Anyway, my point is that the type of person might look at this episode and say that's the reason why we shouldn't try to bring alleged violators to court, because it probably wasn't as bad as she said it was, and courts are never objective about these sorts of things. And just thinking of someone out there might feel validated in that way by this episode made me feel a little uneasy. Regardless, I don't think we should let that hinder this episode any. It's a bold story with a great message, and of course, a great crew to review it.
You hear that, Gino? He said you're a great crew.
Yeah, he called you by your formal name.
Yes,
and crew.
I'm and crew.
I believe,
and
though,
and a red shirt.
No, but I believe though, and crew has finally joined the forums.
Oh really? Yes, I have an avatar and everything.
He does.
Rat Degino. It's good Klingon coffee. I don't think anybody should misconstrue that, and if they do, they would misconstrue anything that anybody said. So. Don't worry yourself over something.
Well, it already shows that, you know, if they're misconstruing the episode like that, it means that they already had that line of thinking before the episode, and then I don't think that, you know.
You can reinforce or not reinforce it. So, but Jarek had something to say as well. He goes on to post, as always, an in-depth and thought-provoking discussion of an episode which itself asks many questions of the viewer, and especially apt, as I am currently marathoning the last seasons of Law & Order SVU. A series which asks all too familiar questions. I couldn't remember much about this episode, so I was quite surprised when the discussion revealed the story's twist. Too nice a word for what happened. So if I ever do get around to rewatching Voyager, it has for the first time negated much of the impact that the story was of a story that was certainly more than simple entertainment. Great show as always. Roll on to the next week. So thank you, Jerry.
Well, I do hope our reviews convince you to do watch Voyager again.
He said something about not having DVDs a long time ago, and then I offered to, you know, he could have the DVDs because I have an extra set of DVDs, and he never contacted us. So, you know.
You know, I mean, you have the internet. If you don't have Netflix, either it's not available where you are, or you don't want to pay the $10 a month to get it. There are other ways to find Star Trek episodes on the internet. I think allstepisodes.com, I think, actually has every one of them. You just have to go through different mirrors.
Let's not have the suggested piracy website when we have the final edit of this episode. Thank you.
Well, we can leave that in. I want to say, though, that why are you watching Law & Order SVU?
It's a good series, that's why.
How many, if you say so. I just keep seeing, every time I see L&O SVU, I keep... you know, thinking that's some sort of brand of SUV or something, like, you know, the specialized, you know, edition of the Hummer.
You're not dyslexic, are you?
Not dyslexic, just dyslexic. Confused. No, I don't do that either. But I am entertained by icicles, so if that's something.
Which we get so much of in Arizona.
Yeah, you know, actually, when it gets really cold outside, Matt, you got to try this really great trick. You know, you pour water from the hose down your roof of your house, you know, at nighttime, and then you get to make icicles. So,
yeah, the next trick. Time it gets down that cold, which is like next to never, I'll do that.
Yeah, well, that's why it's a special occasion. You know, it's worth getting up at 2 a.m. to, you know, trick the kids into thinking, hey guys, this isn't Phoenix anymore. This is the North Pole.
And of course, like, someone won't look in my neighborhood, would look at some crazy guy in the middle of the night on the top of the roof of the house and think that they're not trying to break in.
My thing is, if it's cold enough to make ice, you're standing on your roof with a hose. How are you getting down?
You go down the other side of the roof. You know, we have a you put me on the spot. Now I can't remember what they're called.
You're the one that said go make icicles when it's cold by pouring water off of
you.
Well, you have more than one way down, darn it. There's two ways down. You can jump.
You set
fall.
Yourself up for that bullet.
Yeah.
And besides, my house is surrounded by arroyos anyway, so I couldn't do it if I wanted to.
The royal arroyos. Anyway, Arroyo is Spanish for a ditch. So yes. Matt's surrounded by ditches.
Oh, so Matt has a moat. That's cool.
Yes, surrounding. He needs it, too, because, you know, all the enemies he makes.
I live in an isolated part of town where no one can find me.
That's a good way to do it. Why don't we hear a comment from Medic1849, better known as Blair, who says, good job, guys. This episode was much more deeper than I had thought when I first watched it. You guys brought up some really good thought-provoking points, and it was a joy to listen to. I have a few thoughts about the episode. Number one, great to see Lieutenant Daniels. I loved that character in First Contact. Number two, seeing Seven violated as a child versus a woman was an interesting point that was brought up. I never thought about it that way. Rightly or wrongly, you get more outrage from the public when it's a child.
Yep.
Number three, like Matt, I tended to bring my outside experiences and perceptions to this episode, and I thought Coven was innocent earlier than the episode revealed, although the Coven suicide blindsided me. Did you have a comment there, or should I keep going?
No, I'm glad that I got some validation. because I'm not the only one that brought in their experiences.
Yeah, his validation for our point came on number two, so...
Yes.
Point two is better than point three, I think.
Okay, well, point number four. As you mentioned, public opinion seems to be more damning guilty or not. Often the accusation alone can finish you. I found that if someone is not guilty of something, people tend to think they still are, and the person only got off because of a technicality. Thus, I can understand why Coven was so worried about the accusation getting out. Point number five. I loved Gino's final thought regarding how the episode basically made him feel guilty for his feelings towards Coven. Also, you know it's a good episode when you're still thinking about it days or weeks later. Point number six. Once again, Star Trek does an episode back in the day that is commonplace to TV 20 years later. Nice to hear Tack back on the show, and great job on a tough episode to discuss. Thank you, our Canadian friend.
Yes. He is what it's all about.
And there go the rest of our Canadian listeners.
That's it. They all hate us because I said we only have one friend. But yeah, you know, you made a good point there, how I felt guilty toward my feeling towards Coven. It did keep me thinking, and that's one thing about the episode that stings me a little bit. I think further down the road, I'll be able to look back and enjoy how it moved me, but I still feel bad for feeling the way I did.
Well, you know what, Gina, I would really suggest listening to our review and then going back to watch the episode again, having just heard our discussion about it, because I did that, and I gave Ben a lot of crap this episode, disagreeing with him about Omega Directive, but I just got to reiterate, I think Retrospect was probably one of our best discussions because he came to play, and I was going to be negative on that episode too, but he made a great argument for it. So
yeah, you got to come to play, guys. Always got to come to play. Play ball. Unlike the Arizona Cardinals, who just got whooped 31-7 today.
No, I don't want to. Well, follow sports ball.
I think I'm going to stop.
Star Trek podcast, Ben. Star Trek. Hey.
They play games on Star Trek.
Yeah, Parisi Squares.
And that one, you know, jujitsu episode with Riker and his daddy.
Oh, that silly thing. Actually, they're going to play, in a couple of episodes, I'll just spoil this much. They're going to play, Seven and Janeway are going to play a game on the holodeck that I actually think is a really cool game.
Yeah, called Velocity.
Yes.
And Worf and Guinan played that same game earlier, and Guinan kicked his butt because she starts on level 20. And no, there's also spring ball.
Wasn't that just shooting practice?
That was just an arcade range, Ben. The Velocity is with the little disc.
Okay, fine. So that was the beta version of Velocity. Sorry.
Yeah. Is it Tron? Oh. Are they really just playing Tron?
Yes. Janeway and Seven synthesize a couple of light cycles and they go at it.
That's basically what Catherine Protocol is doing.
Well, before we wrap up feedback this week, I got good news again. We got another 5-star iTunes review.
All right.
So it's a brief one, but it's a sweet one. It's from this is tongue twister. Zaza Zalu. They say, love this podcast, gives Voyager the attention it deserves. The hosts are likable and knowledgeable, and clearly they haven't gotten to later episodes yet because I'm not likable in the least. But
I was just gonna say we're totally and completely knowledgeable though. That's for sure.
Knowledgeable.
Yeah, well, hey, whatever, Gino. I think we're super knowledgeable. We know more about Voyager.
I spend more time in the break than I do researching these episodes.
The reason you guys are knowledgeable is because you podcast with Memory Alpha. Take that.
I wish you would change to Memory Core Alpha 1.1 version. Much more.
Yeah, once they load Andy Dick's protocol into Matt's program, I think it'll be much more agreeable.
What the hell are you doing on my podcast?
And on that note.
Well, listeners, on that note, you can reach any of us in so many different ways. You can reach us through email at deltaquadrantpodcast@gmail.com. You can reach us through the forum at forum.trekmatefamily.com. As Ben told you earlier, you can also leave comments on our individual episodes when you go to trekmate.co.uk or apparently trekmatefamily.com now, which is it's a good thing they redirected that. You can reach us through Twitter at our handle at Delta Quadrant Cast. That's Delta QUADT_cast. And finally, you can reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheDeltaQuadrant. And keep those iTunes reviews coming, because without them, Ben will not go on past Endgame. He's made that very clear to you all.
Forget Endgame. I won't go on past the end of this episode.
You hear that? Ben's walking out. He's throwing down the mic and walking out. But anyways, Ben will be back next week because we'll harangue him back into doing the show again. When we talk about the unforgettable episode of season 4. You may want to forget it because we're going to be talking about Chakotay next week. How excited is everybody?
Woohoo.
I feel something coming on.
That's like a J-Way pain cry cough.
Next week, listeners, you can listen to Melissa's monologue as she reviews Unforgettable by herself.
By herself.
I think we're all going to be sick that day. But until that time, this is Matt in Arizona closing Hailing Frequencies.
This is Ben in Arizona saying adios.
This is Gino in Oklahoma. See you on the other side.
Yay! Hold on.
Thanks for listening to the Delta Quadrant. Please join us again next week. Star Trek Voyager and the Voyager theme song are the property of CBS Television Studios, and no infringement is intended.
You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.